Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed. If you've joined us on this program before, you know that we usually visit with an author. But this month, because it is Poetry Month, we are going to do something a little different. First, let me tell you a little about National Poetry Month. It began in 1996 as a celebration of poetry and was first introduced by the Academy of American Poets. They wanted to increase awareness and appreciation of poetry. Canada followed in 1999, and it has been celebrated every April since that time. To celebrate, we are going to listen to a number of local poets, including Cobourg's Poet Laureate, Ted Amsden, Governor Award-winning Cobourg Poet Richard Green, and members of the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group. In between, I'll bring you a few thoughts from famous poets on poetry itself. In essence, today you can sit back and enjoy our Poetry Month poetry collage. Here are a few words from Natalie Goldberg from her book Writing Down the Bones. Sometimes when I read poems at a reading to strangers, I realize they think these poems are me. They are not me, even if I speak in the I person. They were my thoughts and my hand and the space and the emotions at the time of writing. Every minute we change. It is a great opportunity. At any point we can step out of our frozen selves and our ideas and begin fresh. That is how writing is. Instead of freezing us, it frees us. And seeing that we're celebrating the written word, we thought we'd begin with some poems about writing and poetry. You'll hear from Linda Hutzel-Manning and Marie Prinz. Linda brings us a poem about reciting poetry, and Marie about the importance of preserving language.
This is a poem I wrote about Alice Munro's character Rose from her short story, Who Do You Think You Are? You stand, smooth your pleated skirt, recite the poem, words so electric they glow across the wood-dark room. Classmates stare. Miss Hattie clears her throat, breaks the chalk to underline, read poem of your choice. Her stare impales, condemns you. Whatever were you thinking, Rose? Do you suppose yourself superior because you can learn poems? Who do you think you are? That sin of vanity, of showing off, the nerve to dare to rise above your station, even though you weren't aware you had one until now. Now, with burning cheeks, you realize you've stepped across some unseen adult line, one that demands you repent. Apologize for what? You are not sure. Exuberance, perhaps. These words spilled out, good words. Your hope for praise now held as evidence of guilt. Spontaneity derailed, soaked in disbelief and shame. You take your seat, implode the shock, deny disgrace, shut senses down, glance through the sun-filled window, watch the path a lone bird takes across the morning sky.
This is a poem dedicated to the memory of the lost sugar maples on my street and also to lost words in our language. It is called No Language for Lost Limbs. Old sugar maples edge the road, power lines parting branches, fearful of wind and blackouts, bearing scars of lost limbs, victims of storms and chainsaws. The bee is silent, I tell the children. Cross it out, don't say the sound. They nod and ask, what's a limb? An old word for tree branch, a very large one, a word for you too. Your arms, your legs, limbs, boughs, silent graphemes, lost sounds from language, words once strong, bearing tire swings, tree forts, bare feet, bobcats, ancient hunters with arrows. Limbs, grayed, shedding bark, rotting, crashing to the ground, remnants of a dying language, supplanted by buckthorn, box elders, text messages, lopped words, hieroglyphs sent to silent screens. Limbs climbing, leaping, marching, reaching back, moving forward through centuries to today. Now disemboweled, shriveled, reduced to words not spoken. Don't risk life and limb, be careful, we warn the children. If you lose one, you lose the other. Words hold stories, yours, mine, our histories. Limbs lost forfeit leaves, shade, nouns, verbs, a missing word today, a vanished language tomorrow.
That was Linda Hutzel Manning and Marie Prinz. It seems that Marie is not the only one to talk about preserving our language. Here are some wise words from Margaret Atwood. Poetry is the heart of language, the activity through which language is renewed and kept alive. Here are some words from the Polish poet Czesław Miłosz. He says, "Poetry is as essential as bread. When the physical needs of the body have been satisfied, we begin to look around us to discover meaning and to satisfy the spirit's hunger." In our second set of the Poetry Month Poetry Collage, we meet some interesting characters. Deborah Panko tells us about her father, Nick. Richard Green introduces us to an old friend. And Felicity Signal Reed looks back to her childhood days with her sister.
My father was mostly deaf, and it was a challenge to communicate with him. And his name is Nick, and I think if I read this poem, it would be kind of self-explanatory. At a year old, my father was taken from the farm in Manitoba into North Dakota. My Baba pressed to find the nearest priest who would both baptize and give Nick last rites. Such an event in his history, more crucial, more marked than his birth, my father always suspected the esteemed baptismal certificate somehow made him an American. Typhoid fever had inflamed Nick's mastoid bones, those tiny breast-shaped projections behind each inner ear. When the fever left, so had his hearing, except for that 10%, that fragile link in one ear, allowing him a few words to fit the movements of a mouth, settling him somewhat into the drift. He couldn't hear Beethoven or birdsong, nodded yes so as not to appear ungrateful or difficult or bring unwanted attention to himself. Drank too many coffees each day, bought for him by seamen at the dock, where for 35 years he drove a forklift, loading 1-ton rolls of paper onto boats at the Wellenship Canal. He would have made a better carpenter, measuring, calculating, working wood into what could be useful, stackable bookshelves for his daughters, a cradle, a rocking horse for his granddaughter. But the apprenticeship had gone to the owner's son. Dad's promotion to factory foreman, a schizophrenic wife often in the hospital, 2 children left alone during shift work, and the ulcers that he kept in check with cottage cheese and milk lunch biscuits burst. His one visit to the hospital during all the time I'd known him until his heart attack at 84. He's 98 now, a frail dragon, fiery in his opinions, but compassionate, generous, easy to like, his story as familiar to me as my own. A story that might account for this strange disposition of mine, a fear there are too few words to come my way, too few words to ease my doubts, make sense of the impossible. A story that might explain my hours at the piano figuring out the fingering of a B-flat minor 7 that will slide effortlessly into an E-flat minor, something Nick will never hear played. Or how I taught English my entire working life, connecting to the few who cared, or learned the names, craved the calls of every bird I traveled to see, always knowing somewhere Nick was listening, even when he didn't answer back.
It's in memory of Sheldon Zitner. He died in 2005, so this is set initially as he was in hospital in Toronto. So it's called Heroic Measures. My fabled New Yorker, you saw me off with advice on marriage. Keep it flying. And with mischief, turned to an older friend, I go to prepare a place for you. That was after surgery in the step-down unit. Your small body nested among the wires, a screen to your left counting heartbeats, and on your forehead a cloth to cool you. None of this was really survivable. But I suppose that you are not killable, and that you and death would keep waiting for the blink. I bought a bottle of wine while you were dying. It was somewhere on the Avenue of the Americas. And from my change, 5 folded ones fell out of my pocket into the wind. And in the dark, 5 figures, one on a bicycle, chased them down and laid them in my hand. So much, I thought, for the myth of the nasty New Yorker. But what is sentiment in Manhattan? Far from your bed and bones, I heard you. Still yourself, touching this milk of kindness with your tongue. Repeat the experiment. This time, use 20s.
I wrote this poem for my sister, and it's dedicated to her. It's called A Stench of Foxes, and it's about our early childhood. Do you remember how when we were little, the sharp paint flakes fell from the rusty railings in the park? How we ran from the open hill, its mud scars beaded with a soft sea rain, our raincoats flapping sharply, as did the heavy, deep green leaves of laurels and rhododendrons which overhung the lower paths, dripping rain as dark as blood. The foxes drew us there, and there we ran headlong down those walks, where an unsteady wind blew rain and a pungent smell in our faces. Crouching by the flimsy cage, we watched their staring red-rimmed eyes and flowing, twisting bodies. That perpetual motion and the snarl of sharp teeth seemed a desperate denial of the wire, and we sniffed with exultation the solid stench of defiance. It was the nearest view we got of blood in the streets, the closest we came to feeling the hot breath of a fanatic at our neck. Though bombs burst, ships sailed, and night by night fires stained the cloudy skies, but always several miles away. Now in my reveries the foxes turn and turn again, nosing their cages for a weakened wire. Conjured by dreams, I watch their foxy feet run freely, moonlit down the rhododendron paths. Jaunty in ordered parkland, they cavort and run, till running they find the heavy railings rusted out. They snuff the town, the human dirt, the unknown trails they might explore. Here on the brink, what will they choose? The bushy vaults and empty night of coupled certainty, a shared confinement? But wakened, I will never know. It's too late now to see if they will set a limit to their running.
Those were poems by Deborah Panko, Richard Green, and Felicity Sidnell Reed. I hope you are enjoying Word on the Hill's poetry collage to celebrate National Poetry Month. There's plenty more to come from Northumberland's poets, but first, let's take a short break.